The Gorecast is brought to you by American Horrors, the greatest uncut horror channel in the world. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all horror. As well as the station of decapitation, Without Your Head.
America's longest running horror channel, www.withoutyourhead.com.
The following program is rated TV-MAL. It contains strong language and is intended only for mature audiences. Viewer discretion advised.
What's up, Gorecasters? Welcome back to the Gorecast with me, Johnny Deadly, and not the rest. Some of the horror movie reviewing miscreants that are part of the Gorecast. Giz and Carter.
Yeah, we're puzzles.
Yes, we are puzzles.
Hello.
I do like the Green Dwarf.
Yes. Yeah, I'm digging on that.
Yes, Buzz has got a day leave from the SS Gorecast. Well, we're all fucking stuck up here, and Giz is in his bedroom.
Bedroom.
Well, there's none of that in the old Red Dwarf start.
Do 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 do.
That thing.
Do 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 do.
It's cold outside. There's no kind of atmosphere. I'm all alone, more or less. Let me fly far away from home for fun, fun, fun in the sun, sun, sun. I want to lie shipwrecked and comatose, drinking fresh mango juice, goldfish shoals nibbling at my toes for fun, fun, fun in the sun, sun, sun. That's all your fault. That was, yeah, that's what happens. That's what happens.
I didn't make the ship. That's just the ship we got. You can't blame me.
I blamed you for, no, I'm blaming you for starting humming the Red Dwarf.
Oh, that, yeah.
Theme.
You can blame me for that.
The point that I was trying to make was for the first one or two seasons, it was just a no, not as background music. That was actually the start, and the theme song with the lyrics didn't come on until the end of the show. And then after season three or four, I think it came in as the beginning of the show.
Wow.
Oh, we got Cags, and we got.
Hello, what's going on, brother? How are you? Hello, Gaggles. How are you? Welcome in. How art thou? We are just we're starting late, but it's going to be great.
What up, Joseph?
Starting late, gonna be great. Joseph. Supposedly. And hello, Joseph.
It's the same. We have zero viewers.
Ignore Kick. I'm assuming it has something to do with the fact that the website's new.
Yeah. Or they launched the app yesterday.
Did they?
A few days ago, at least. Yeah. So it's maybe. What if it's only registering viewers through the app?
Yeah, there's always bugs to work out.
No, from a guy who works in programming now, I would imagine that it seems like their desktop UI and their mobile app UI are conflicting with each other, because also when I went to share out the stream, normally there's like a little, when you go to share, there's normally like a little Facebook icon, a little Twitter icon, and a little, you know, one or two other social media sites. All that was there was CopyLink. That's what took me ages, because it didn't just automatically post what I'd written for the stream. But it's okay, we're over here. And we're lost in space, except for Giz, who's in his bedroom.
How do you know that this isn't just the way that I decorate my room on the ship?
I can see it.
Okay. 2 seconds.
I'm just saying, like, you know.
Because you're not on the user logs for the ship. That's why.
User logs. It's because I always use your password.
That's a different password.
Why do you think you have all that weird stuff in your...
It's a different password, you fuck. Do you like our new background wallpaper?
Uh-huh.
I'll put it on YouTube for you guys if for some reason you wanted it. Actually, I probably won't put it on YouTube because it'll defeat the purpose, but it's a WebM, so you can use it as your desktop wallpaper if you want. If anyone wants a Gorecast Green Dwarf wallpaper, let me know and I'll send it to you.
Nice.
Just so I got bored. But yeah, that's the ship. I'm very proud of that. That took way longer than I should have.
SXT droid cam.
It looks
external
very cool.
Droid cam. EXT.
Is that an E?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It's just, I thought it was an S.
Should it say security? I can rename them if you want. Should it say security droid?
No. You were right. It just looked like I was looking at an S rather than an E, because it's kind of. My screen is a bit small.
Anyway, whole point of the show tonight is we were going to do it as a beatdown, but Buzz isn't here. So I was like, let's not do a beatdown. Let's just do a discussion.
Which I think is probably going to work out better.
It's just
anyway.
That customarily in the beatdowns, Buzz and Carter have been what some would describe as canonically short in their descriptions and information for backing up their characters. And I was like, if it's just Carter, me and Giz, I was like, that's going to be a quick show.
So, like life, I just have trouble finding legs to stand on.
4 point equal a curse. What? Sex droids. What? Tristan Giz, if interior design was an option in space, I'd have left Earth years ago.
But it is. Seriously, it all depends on who's in the ship. I've seen people that have done up their rooms and it would look like it's a room in a house and it's actually, you know. Just saying.
Anime. That's what we're talking about tonight. But not so much anime, but it's westernized live action adaptions. And are they all shit? Are some of them good? Or maybe any of them good?
I tell you, I think probably one of the first ones I saw ever.
That will be coming up. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm warning you, it will not be in a positive light.
Yeah.
It never happened.
Well, unfortunately, kids, other people, like myself and Carter, who do movie reviews, don't have the ability to just blank movies out of our fucking head like you do.
What do you mean ability? I'm rocking back and forth, having a fucking teeter on the edge
well
of a nervous
teetering, because we've been talking about it in a while, because I feel you can't talk about the good without talking about the bad, and if we're going to be talking about the bad, Dragon Ball Z definitely has to be on the list. That is a terrible movie.
Oh, yeah.
As live action Western adaptions of anime go, I've never seen, which what shocked me was, it'd be one thing if it was one of those anime, you know, where, okay, the comics got translated and came over here and maybe there was like one season of a cartoon or something like that, you know, where it's kind of like, okay, maybe we didn't know the source material and it's kind of everyone's fault. You know, we have waded into unknown waters and this is what we came up with. But it was Dragon Ball Z in like 2010. There was like 2,000 fucking episodes out at that fucking stage. 14 seasons, 400 successive cartoon seasons. Another fucking movie. Another fucking animated movie. So many toys. So many video games. And the comics came back.
It gets worse. No, it gets worse. Because technically that film is supposed to be an amalgamation of Dragon Ball original and Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, wow. That's a lot to shove into one movie.
Mm-hmm. That could be why it fucked up rotten.
Tristan gives Johnny an inhaler.
4 million episodes. Couldn't get one thing fucking right in the entire fucking movie. Explain that to me.
Me and Cox were kind of there.
Anyway, getting away from that horrible thing and onto some
way more involved in finding the Dragon Balls than I remember in the fucking season. I know Dragon Balls and finding the Dragon Balls came up, but I don't remember it being like the core thing.
That's actually what I meant by the film's attempt to be an amalgamation of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z.
They're looking
for the Dragon Ball. It very much was.
Yeah, it very much was the core fucking thing. Like, that was Bulma's entire shtick.
Goku. So let's do the two of them.
Kig says there's like 894 episodes, if he recalls right.
Live with Byron. You don't know what a Byron is? He's a Liverpudlian person. Go to Liverpool and find him. You'll understand what I'm talking about. If you live with Byron, it's 4,952 fucking episodes of Dragon Ball Z.
No, it's the same one. Yeah. They're on loop.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. Yep. You nailed it. Well done.
Your fault, a little bit of Dragon, by the way. What you're saying.
I know. I know.
Your fault.
I know.
I could be trying to blame Saban films, but nope. I'm blaming directly fucking you.
Oh. I introduced him to it. I made the terrible mistake.
Guys, you need to sit down and watch this movie. It's fucking amazing. I know. It's been out for fucking 20 fucking years. Are you aware of what Cartoon Network is?
Yeah, but like this is Giz gave it to me. Now it's super fantastic.
No, now it's
explosion.
I'm sitting on your floor with a laptop watching it, opposed to watching it on a big screen on Cartoon Network like I used to. It's almost exactly like the experience I had as a child. Just all of the magic and wonderment isn't there. My spine kind of hurts, and I'm sitting on the floor.
Ah, good times.
I still love Dragon Ball Z.
I like Dragon Ball
and
Z
Dragon
too.
Ball Super, which is now
got crazy after a while, though. I won't lie to you. It went from Dragon Ball Z to Turbo and from Turbo to Super, or maybe that's the other way around. But all I know is it turns out no matter how many levels of Super Saiyan they get to, if you meet someone who's bigger and better than him, there's always one more fucking level.
Yep.
Basically, Funimation did Dragon Ball GT. It was their own kind of thing. And then Toriyama came back and did Dragon Ball Super, which is the proper continuation from Dragon Ball Z.
I just know I got a little bit lost back in the day.
Yeah, Floor is good, Kev, but not for 894 episodes of a television show.
Dude, can you imagine what would have happened if Dragon Ball Abridged was around back then?
I would have been less upset with that, because if Dragon Ball Abridged had just come out back then, I wouldn't have seen it.
Why? You would have put it on.
Yeah, but I wouldn't
constantly.
Have seen it. One of the reasons I had an issue with Dragon Ball Z was I had seen it a lot.
Ah, right, gotcha, yeah. But you would have ended
Hans
up seeing
neighbor,
it
remember.
A lot, is my point.
So much, yes. Dragon Ball. Not complaining, Cartoon Network. Love you forever. Samurai Jack.
Have you seen Primal yet?
But I've heard I will like it because it's Samurai Jack with.
It's the same. It's the same dude that's doing the show, and it's once again the most of it is silent storytelling, I suppose, and it's basically a cave dude running around with a dinosaur in olden times, and. There's other stuff,
and there's other stuff.
Get into it properly myself. I've only seen bits. Yeah, because I don't want to ruin it. Because apparently, like in season two, there's a massive world shift whereby it's like, wait, what? You mean this is what was actually going on the entire time? What? So, you know, I don't want to spoil that for people.
Oh, would you look at this? One of the benefits of my new big screen, I can have. Okay. Nope, I fucked up. That's the wrong page.
Can we talk about, like, I hesitate to use the word good adaptations considering the film I'm about to say, but more enjoyable, enjoyed, better, more fun. Things that don't make me want to go kill the people that made
them. What are we talking here, kids?
Neutronics.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Also, I have no clue what that is.
Actually, you both do. Neutronics was one of the names for the first live-action Guyver movie.
Oh.
Which was my introduction to the entire notion of live-action anime, except I didn't realize I was watching live-action anime. I just thought it was this really cool thing with like the kind of monster suits that I'd seen in certain Japanese things before. But yeah, that was my introduction. And the thing is, that story is... a very, very, very loose, rendition of the actual first couple of chapters of the Guyver thing. And even still, somehow, in some way, it managed to be more faithful than the thing we were talking about a few minutes ago. You know, like the fucking the story, like it went, goes off in its own direction, and you know, it's a lot more farcical, but it was also entertaining because you had these really cool looking monster suits. You know, and bear in mind, this was like mid 90s. You know, you had these really cool monster suits, really good looking transformations from human into the monster. And then when the Guyver actually arrives on, it looks pretty cool. And there's cool fight choreography. And yeah, some of the dialogue is cheesy and stupid. And they do lean more towards the comedy thing.
Second one.
That's from the Guyver Dark Hero. Second one. Yeah. Which was actually a more serious film in terms of story. It's kind of like they went, okay, we got over with Mutronics with the first Guyver film, and people kind of liked that, and it was kind of a niche. But you know, meanwhile the animated stuff and the comics they're keep going. So it's interesting that the second movie focused once again on certain aspects from the anime, but then took it in its own direction. So while the original movie, you have, you know, their version of the origin story, how Sho, or in this case Sean Barker rather than Sho Fukamachi, gets his hands on this alien armor and accidentally headbutts the fucking thing, and it gets put on him, I guess. It's kind of like this living...
Yeah, on him is one way of putting it.
...bio suit.
Right.
Yeah, it wraps... Now, it's done differently in the live-action film than it is in the anime in terms of how the suit interacts. In the live-action, it's like a parasite, I guess. And when the suit retracts, it's almost like it goes in underneath his skin. In the anime, it's actually in another dimension, and it's always present behind Sho. So when he summons it, it's actually like it's slightly out of phase with our reality until he summons it, and then it's wrapped around him, and then he's powered up. Yeah, it's actually an interesting... I can understand completely why they would have changed it, because special effects-wise, I guess, it would have been far more of a pain in the ass to have the fucking suit like materialize
fly out of nowhere and come upon him.
In the anime? Yeah, it's... okay, so the first... There was two anime series. There was an OVA that originally did it. Basically, the first anime that, let's say, you and I probably would have seen would have been an adaptation of it. And it didn't really explain as well in that what the story was with the suit. Now, the more recent one that was done there about 20 years ago, which was Guyver Bio-Boosted Armor, that followed the comics a little bit more closely, and it explained things properly, and explained that basically the suit resides in, like, just slightly out of phase with our reality until Sho summons it, and then there's a massive energy field. He's actually used it as a defense mechanism, whereby when the suit comes into our reality, there's, I suppose, an energy field, a force bubble that expands around Sho. So he's actually used that to blast fucking enemies away from him while the suit equips around him.
Okay, kind of a 2-second protection.
Precisely, okay. Yeah, exactly. It's like think of the suit emerging from an alternate dimension as having enough concussive force to push anything away from him.
Do you know what bugged me about these movies, especially the second one? If you were to, you know, like say I went to take a shit or something while you were changing movies and put this on and just told me, I think we're just going to watch Power Rangers for a while, I'd be like, all right.
Oh, yeah,
it would take me quite
kind
some
of
time
like
to realize that I wasn't watching Power Rangers.
Yeah.
But you see, that's the point that I was making a while ago when I said that Mutronics, when I saw it as a kid, reminded me of certain stuff that I had already seen. And it would have been because while we were watching Power Rangers, don't forget, that is a chopped up version of 3 or 4 different Japanese TV shows that had like been doing the rounds for like 5, 6, 10 years or whatever.
Sacrosanctum is a completely original thing. No one ever thought of it before. I won't hear you speak of the Power Rangers Tommy Forever. What?
Tommy Forever.
So anyway, because it was an amalgamation of all these other shows, and you know,
don't
make
me kick you out the airlock. You know, I think that might be the new timeout corner. Instead of me just making the screen disappear, I'll make the screen disappear and then I'll cut to the Among Us window, but I'll just have you or whoever just floating through space with the Among Us music behind it temporarily.
Oh, that's awesome.
Point is, when the people who made Mutronics, the first Guyver movie, were looking to adapt the Japanese story, they rightfully took the idea of looking at the monster TV shows, Super Sentai, thank you, Joseph, such as that, that had these costumed creatures and superheroes fighting with choreographed martial arts. Now, they wanted to introduce that because that's basically kind of what you have in the anime anyway. You have the Guyver unit. It's this alien armor that turns an ordinary guy into essentially a killing machine, going up against people who have been altered by a super secret shadowy organization to become what our legends of werewolves and other shapeshifters are based on. These people that can transform into terrifying monsters that secretly rule the world, essentially. And when they were doing the live action version of it, they naturally went to the stuff that already existed. They looked at how, you know, these anthropomorphic creatures had been represented in Japanese live action stuff, and I suppose with Power Rangers would have been around when I saw Mutronics and probably when it was made, but I doubt it would have had the influence you think it would, but it would have been influenced by the same kind of stuff. So as a result, like you said, if you catch this halfway through, then you're probably thinking that you're watching some weird version of Power Rangers, especially for the first film. But I think for the second one, Guyver Dark Hero, because the storyline is a bit more serious, especially if, like me, you managed to get your hands on the uncut version, it would detract from the idea that you're watching a kid's comedy show, especially when you see, like, monsters getting decapitated and fountains of blood, because that was one of the appealing things about Mutronics. Proper all-out gore. One of the first things you see in it is one dude crushing the skull of another dude mid-transformation, just straight up crushed it, and the gore level goes from there. You have limbs being chopped off, you have fucking holes being punched in people. In the second film, they're able to bring in more stuff. There's a distinct scene of a monster getting both of its eyes basically shot out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a fight where, like, a test of strength, except hands get snapped and bones are sticking out. All this stuff made it visually appealing. Now, it is an adaptation of the original story. I have read the original story. I've seen the different animes. I could point out all the differences to you. But what's interesting is the core aspects that they took and made in the adaption. Now, in the first story, it's the intro stuff. It's, you know, it's Lisker, who should have actually been somebody wearing a Guyver suit himself, but instead is the top, like, he's the head of the Zoonoid gang that we're dealing with, the Enforcers. It's the origin of Sean Barker rather than Sho Fukamachi getting the suit. You have Mitsuki Segawa. Yeah, you have Mitsuki Segawa as Sean's girlfriend. In the live action version, her father works for Kronos, the company that have found the Guyver and that are, you know, responsible for the genetic engineering.
Oh no, what are we
in the anime,
do?
It's her
right.
In the anime, it's actually her brother is Sho's best friend, and Mitsuki is Sho's crush, essentially. You know, he's mad after her, but he never does anything about it because he's shy as fuck.
Unless he's in the Guyver suit, at which point movie, he's too busy murdering shit to be trying to fucking get some poon.
Until he has to rescue her, in which case, hey, I'm a superhero.
Look at me, I got a robo wiener.
Surprise. In the second film, they took stuff that happened later on in the story arc, like stuff that it primarily got to do with the spaceship of the creators, the alien race that created humanity in the first place to be the template for its bioweapons division, which is what the Zoonoids essentially were. Now, the big experiment was when they decided to take the armor that they were using themselves, this adaptive armor that could fit any species, and stick it on their latest template.
Sorry to interrupt you for
humanity.
A moment. I'm just I'm after getting a bit into watching Guyver Dark Hero here on the right of me. Slight production question as I'm watching it is all that styrofoam suiting that those guys are wearing, who decided fighting a lake was a good idea?
Right? I'm thinking those poor know. Bastards.
Do you mean in terms of storyline or in terms of story creation?
How do you move? Like, Styrofoam.
Right, like...
Styrofoam been canonically absorbent. We have to pull these
poor bastards out, weighing like 50 pounds more.
I don't know if there's styrofoam suits. Styrofoam is the wrong word.
Foam. Whatever the fucking foam is. Foam.
But this is my point. I mean, they would have known that the scenes, what they were doing, would have required suits that can go in the water, so... Clearly, props to the production company for making suits that could be used in the water.
And or wrote off. The or the suits were off, just like, rode okay, off. That's kind of where I'm going. Is the suits were just...
Right. Here's the land.
We shoot the whole movie and then the big fight scene in the lake. Tell you what, we're doing that last.
It's an interesting possibility.
We're doing that last.
But there was a distinct improvement in quality in regards to mobility for the suits from the first... The second one. Now these guys are well. I suppose the rhino-looking dude is kind of a bit of an example, but later on in the second movie, you have, like I was saying, the aliens stuck their armor onto a human, and the result was that they had a human that they could no longer mentally control the way they could mentally control all their zoonoid creations. Later on in the Dark Hero movie, you have something that combines stuff from the original story arc with the later stuff, and that's. They find a Guyver unit that's damaged. Now, in the original story, originally that's something that happens much earlier, and the Lisker character, actually puts on that damaged suit of armor and has his own Guyver suit, but Shaw is able to defeat him because the armor is glitched. They do this, they do it in Guyver Dark Hero as well, except this time they have the armor being worn by somebody who's already been turned into a zoonoid. So you have this fantastic looking creation. First you have the dude as a zoonoid, and then you have him armored up, and it allows for a really, the suit design allowed for a really cool choreographed fight scene. And even some of the zoonoids that are in for that scene as well, their suits are more streamlined. They're not bulky, and they're able to do proper choreographed fights, similar to the kind of stuff that we would have seen in the original first Turtles movie.
Point of the episode, would you say your live actions are a good adaptation?
In this case, in regards getting the feel of the story, yes, it is a good adaptation. In regards getting necessarily all the plot points, probably not. But at the very least, it works to get people interested. And, you know, once somebody learns, hey, there's another version and it's longer. I think absolutely. It definitely got me interested in Guyver and, more importantly, in the idea of this style of film.
Yeah. I suppose which one was of the other things that this Guyver had going for it was... This is back in, like, the late 80s, early 90s.
Mid-90s.
The first one came out in 91.
The first one?
Yeah.
The second one is 94, is it?
The old Western grasp on anime, or grasp of what the fuck is going on in these Japanese cartoons, wasn't as there as it is now.
True. Like I said, there's a lot of things that change, but I think they definitely... People
I was using
the story,
this as a segue to get into the next movie. Okay.
I'm going to shut up.
Another movie that came out into... was on Netflix and was of possibly one of the most well-known animes out there, or if not well-known, most well-recognized animes out there, called Death Note. And oh boy, did they!
And there's something that I never quite got about how monumentally they fucked up on that, and that's the fact that I'd
you
say
know the
one
thing is
if they were
didn't,
the first people attempting.
Say what you were going to say. Go on.
I was going to say that like it's not like they were the first people that attempted or to do a live action version of Death Note.
No, the Japanese were.
Like there's. Yeah, and like that's kind of why I'm sitting there kind of going, why did they not just look at what the Japanese did? And do their version of what the Japanese did. And instead,
I actually
just...
think in some respects they might have done a minorly better job. Or no, sorry, no, that's wrong. I think they managed to kind of compress stuff down well in the story. The problem, and it's something when I, because I think we actually reviewed this on the show when it came out, because I was so fucking pissed off that I was like, I don't give a fuck we're talking about it. It's about a guy who kills people with a book. That's horror. We're talking about it. It's something I've come back to watch a second and even third time around and have found I have more of an appreciation for the job they did in it. Don't get me wrong, it's still not a great adaptation, but it's a very good example of how a lot of the Western adaptions of anime go tits up, where they got so much right, but what they got wrong was so fucking wrong that it was hard to look by. Because I won't lie to you, William Dafoe as Ryuk was genius casting.
Genius. That was probably my favorite part of that whole thing.
The what's the main kid's name?
We have...
L is the detective kid, isn't it? Or is L the fucking kid with the death note?
I always thought L was an angel, by the way.
Oh, no. L is the death note. Blonde-haired guy. Oh, wait a minute. Here we go. White.
L is the kid who has the death note and is running around with Ryuk. And it's M, isn't it? Is the detective?
Other way around. L is the detective.
And M is the... Isn't one of them called Light?
Yeah, one of them's called Light Turner. That's the blonde-haired guy that's got the book. Yeah. And then L was the detective.
All right, I might just be merging all of them in together. The kid who plays L did a great job. I don't give a fuck about the race change or anything like that. He did, right down to the way he's sitting and eating the candy and stuff, and some of the visual kind of... There's a lot of visual cues from the show there that were done really well. And even, I won't lie to you, the kid that plays Light, his character... The problem with his character is all of the story arc is kind of there. You know, like, it's just that they American Boy Scout him opposed to... You never...
I think...
Like, the whole point of Death Note was, like, what happens when you give a normal... Like, at the cusp of it all, it's what happens when you give a normal kid the powers of a god. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And even though Light is doing what he does for, you know, just reasons, you know, he's kind of like, there's all these criminals going on around the world. All of them are getting locked up and all of them are getting out and just doing all the same shit again. What if there's a permanent solution to this? You know, it's that, it's kind of like Breaking Bad. Do you know what I mean? It's that watching a guy get curbed and manipulated and crushed due to the power that he has and make it in a weird way change his original, albeit slightly immoral, but just cause for doing things. And in the Death Note series, that never really happens. Or sorry, not the series, in the Death Note movie from Netflix, that never really happens. He's just kind of still a good guy and the power never crushes him. He just happens to be, you know, it's kind of like, you know, people are like, you know, you're whoever's doing this, you're still killing people, right? They're just bad people, but it's still illegal to kill people. And he's kind of like, they're bad people.
Kinks is Light does it because he loves the power and control. He's a fucking psychopath.
In the anime, yes. I'm talking about the movie.
I was getting ready to read this next part, and that was going to be my question. It was like, was he talking about the anime or the movie? Because that's what I thought the movie was about, you know. I think part of the problem is they're like, you have stuff that's written, like say when you have overseas and stuff, they're writing for like their times and tribulations. And then when we try to bring it over here, not everything can like cross over. Like you can't plug whatever's going on here into a story and it still kind of flow the same way.
He was in Japan for the movie, wasn't he?
Yeah, but I just mean...
in Japan.
Right, but I just mean like the writing style sometimes just doesn't
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I get you. 100%.
But even if he wasn't in Japan, like the situations of the series, there's nothing that happens in the anime that can't happen anywhere else.
Yeah, their prisons are overrun with criminals, and criminals keep getting turned around. And
yeah, there's no geographically locked situation. You know, they can't be transplanted to anywhere else.
Yeah, no. I completely agree with you. I don't know, that movie bugged me. I hated it initially, and then it just got to that annoying itch at the back of your back that you never get to scratch it properly. You only get to barely graze it, and it kind of feels good for a second while you're grazing, and then you realize, oh, there's way more itch to scratch. I just found that to be this in it. Like, the kid that played Light played him good, except it's just the characters written in that movie like he's a fucking Boy Scout. The only thing that they just nailed out of the park was Willem Dafoe's Ryuk.
And I haven't gotten into like a lot of Death Note. I've watched it a bit, and so when the movie came out, I was like, all right, cool. And even not knowing that much about, you know, the anime and stuff, I still couldn't really get into it. Like, it just didn't. Again, William Dafoe was the only thing I really walked away digging the hell out of on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I will say the live action Japanese versions I thought were way too long. Like, every one of those movies is like 3 hours long, 3.5 hours long.
Yes.
And I thought that they got the kind of the pacing of this down to something that was really nice and palatable, but it sacrifices that. I don't think time constraints were responsible for. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, as Kag said, even in the live action animes, the Japanese ones, Light, he starts off, you know, been like, I'll be the judge and executioner, which it is a total power thing, 100%. But then he gets very psychotic as the movies progress, because there's this mouse cat and mouse game between him and L, which I love. I that cat and mouse game is one of the best cat and mouse games, because the two of them are so fucking smart, and it's just one really smart fucker fucking over the other smart fucker, and then the other really smart fucker fucks that guy over, and
Holmes
it's
and Moriarty
literally
Holmes.
Like that level. I really, really appreciate that, and they somehow kind of squash that down to like, there's elements of it there in the Netflix adaption, but not to the same extent. Like, I remember showing someone the anime series after they'd watched this, and I was like, you need to watch the fucking anime if you want to see what the whole buzz is about. Because, like, a lot of people, they watch this and they're like, for a lot of Westerners, this might have been their first experience into the world of Death Note. And they were kind of like, I don't get what all the buzz is about. And it's kind of like, you need to watch the fucking anime. You're going to understand what the buzz is about. And they were literally like on the edge of their seat after like three episodes watching these two smart fucks just fuck each other over in, oh, it's a thing of beauty. And just that kind of nail-biting tension that was there in the anime series and in the live-action, the Asian live-action adaptions just wasn't hearing this. It felt like something that was just going through the motions with a really cool storyline. It's nice that your man from fucking Heroes was in it. That was a bit of a fucking pop for me, you know what I mean? But it's kind of like, hey, you're not your man from Heroes, and you're kind of fucking up a relatively well-known character here, to be blatantly honest. I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah, but Death Note, I think if you hated it initially, you should give it a watch back with a like a wider eye, I suppose, would be one way of putting it. Like, don't go in ready to hate and sit down. And there is an enjoyable movie in there, just wrapped in a lot of caca.
I find I haven't really hated too many like live actions. I see where, like, hey, you know, they brought that to the table, they could have done better. But I have yet to really find one that I've actually... No, that's not true. We're talking about that later. That I've actually, like, just wholeheartedly, like, hated. Otherwise, it's just kind of like, you know, Death Note. I was like, I watched it. The effects were cool. You know what I mean.
If you want to jump in with your one now, you can jump in, or I can tell you another one that, like, if you didn't hate it, I think you should.
I'm good. Go ahead.
I can think of
start
one.
To finish. Ghost in the Shell. Ghost in the fucking
Ghost
Shell.
In the Shell.
What are you doing, Hollywood?
Oh.
Yeah, Ghost in, like, the two of us fucking same fucking wavelength.
What are you doing?
Why give us this fucked up, idiotic attempt at an origin story for something that we never fucking asked for, when all you had to do was look at any of the fucking adaptations that have already happened and do that, you Muppets?
Okay, I completely forgot about that one.
Good.
I don't know, man. I still can't say I hated it.
You probably should.
I definitely disliked it more than, say, others, but I still, like, it didn't get that hate level.
What annoys me the most about it is how spot on it was with all the visuals, barring the obvious.
Oh, dude, the visuals. And then I think that's what it was. The visuals were kick-ass.
Yeah, but the only reason those visuals were kick-ass were they spent so long trying to recreate fucking scenes from the movie frame by frame that they forgot to actually write a fucking storyline for the rest of the fucking movie, because they didn't do Ghost in the Shell directly, like, scene for scene. You know what I mean? They took a lot of liberties and they did their own fucking scripting and they did their own fucking this and that, but they just decided that they were like, okay, when we get to this fight scene, this is a very notable fight scene from the show, so I think we should spend what can only be described as all of our time making sure that these fight scenes look exactly like they do in the show, because that's why people like Ghost in the Shell, was because it had some really cool fight scenes, and that was it. That's the only reason.
Not
because it was a goddamn cyberpunk lover's wet dream of a fucking anime. Not that it was a fucking rather poignant look at kind of the way politics and the government were starting to behave in advance of what began happening in the mid-2000s. You know, it was all about, no, you gotta get Kate Beckinsale, you gotta get her into the fucking see-through suit, you know, people, because that's probably also Scarlett Johansson. Yeah, we gotta get ScarJo into the fucking, you have to get her,
that's
into the see-through suit,
because
it's the only way we're gonna get them titties on the screen. She doesn't do the titties.
Hang on a second.
But, you know, this is crucial, and technically it's not the titties.
Whoa, hang on. Big question here.
They all look the same.
It's a Japanese company. Hang on. It's a Japanese company that made this whole robotic body that we're doing the film for. Yeah, like the whole point of this film is set in Japan. Yeah, and it's a Japanese body and it's a Japanese company and all the rest of it. So why does it look like a white boy, a white girl? Why does their top of the range cyber body that a Japanese company is making, why is it Caucasian?
You get good money for the ScarJo model, I presume.
Yep.
People love a bit of ScarJo.
Like, this is one of the major fucking issues that people had with this film, especially because at the time when it was announced they're going to be doing a Ghost in the Shell movie, one of the very first things that was said is get ready for the whitewashing, and like with no explanation given, and that was the thing. Once again, This is one of those things whereby geography actually does matter. If you're setting a film in a country and you have that country being the ones that are predominantly running this fucking company in it, or, you know, the people of that country, why are they going to design something that looks like somebody else?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's part of the issue that I'm seeing with a lot of stuff lately. Case in point, just slightly... why would a Swedish or Finnish writer from the 1700s not write about his character from the sea being pale-skinned? Just throwing that one out there, you know, since that's predominantly where he came from, all pale-skinned people. Just, you know. But that was one of the big things that let this movie down, apart from the fact that they then tried to retcon everything by having it being some fucking piss-poor origin story for the main character, rather than just giving us the goddamn motherfucking stories that we fucking fell in love with in the first place. That would allow you to do these adaptations.
An origin, you open up the
I don't mind
the asses,
but, like,
and,
I'm not like,
you get to possibly grab new people.
I'm not a stickler for the I am a stickler for the details. I don't mind if people want to get inventive and kind of do their own take on something, or, you know, do
you know, kind of be like, okay, I have this vision for an extra, you know, we might add this in here. I think it could kind of enhance the story. And I'm using the word enhance the story very specifically here. I don't mind when you do that, when you manage to add something new to something I'm already familiar with. I love that. But if you're going to do that, you need to have it either make sense. Actually, no, not either or. You need to make it make sense. And it needs to not just make sense as in the scene itself makes sense, but it can't, like, you're slotting your idea into a bigger picture here. You know what I mean? So you have to make sure that this extra puzzle piece that you're adding in is something that fits.
Yep.
You know?
And considering...
They didn't that with this movie. All of the liberties that they took were just like, oh, okay, look, all that political bullshit. take all the subtext. We're just going to fuck that clean out of the script, because we can get another fight scene in there, by the way. If we take the subtext out from what they're talking about, we can literally add another fight scene. I don't think you understand the words that I'm saying here, Mr. Producer Man. Another fight scene. Hear me now.
People will.
We take all the subtext, we throw it out. We just make it that government bad, robo lady, no like government. And no, that's it. Robo government lady.
Any story complexity that would have been in the original, that would have actually been the entire reason that this was set above, and you need to understand the amount of cyberpunk fucking anime and manga that is out there. One of the reasons that this rises above it is because it doesn't just take the fucking comic book cartoony approach to stuff. It actually, funnily enough, makes you think about interesting notions more, like such as the human psyche. What is AI? What are the limits of the human mind?
If someone was able to just hack your brain and just take control of you, and you're just left there as a literal ghost in a shell.
Where is the future of, you know, the cyber prosthesis heading?
Where does the line between I'm a human and now I'm just a robot end?
It's similar notions to Altered Carbon in a slick way. But the point is, these ideas...
Altered Carbon is similar notions to Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. These ideas, this story complexity, the characters themselves, how involved they are, and not just, once again, okay, the film, a lot of us, maybe anime fans that have only seen the film, maybe haven't seen some of the shows like Standalone Complex, where they are able to go into individual characters. All these things come together and allow for a very rich world in which to delve into and draw out any number of stories. And instead, they just decided to copy and paste the anime movie for a couple of scenes, take out any notion of story complexity, even from the movie, and give us what they thought was basically a live-action comic book.
Garjo in see-through suit, please.
How about we get an Asian actress to play the Asian character manufactured in the Asian companies?
Hello? Okay, I'll pass on the message. It's Johnny Hollywood. He said, put ScarJo in the see-through suit, please.
Yep.
And put it on the poster.
Cool. Not a bother. How about we have her not be Major Kusanagi? Because that's doable. That's totally doable. You should still be naked.
I'm having questions as, do you mean naked or do you mean...
Not in a skin suit.
She doesn't do naked. Do you mean in the see-through suit?
We accept the see-through suit for the sake of live-action Western audiences.
Who's the new character?
Make something up. If there's a wide world to delve from, make something up. Just don't have her being Major Kusanagi.
Okay. I'm really quoting him. He said, why the fuck would we make something up? That's the whole reason we're adapting something, so I don't have to come up with anything original.
Right there.
But you're making up everything else.
No, it's more of like a cut and paste kind of vibe.
But you're making up everything else.
No, it's just a cut and paste.
Do I have to do it in that voice?
You're fired!
I don't want to be you anyway, motherfucker.
Just the messenger man, okay? Blame Johnny Hollywood. I'm the only one with a functioning blame phone Johnny on the spaceship.
Fucking bomb Johnny Hollywood.
Well, we can do that. We're literally floating through.
Goddamn. Can't even just take a normal story.
We can do that. We're literally floating through space, as is proven by this very, very real, very, very live droid footage from outside of the ship.
Get me the red button. Oh. Everyone else is allowed to push it.
No one. I'm literally the only one with the red button. If anyone's going to blow this fucking show out of the air, it's me.
I'm not about blowing the show out of the air. I'm not that red button. I mean the red button that drops bombs on Johnny Hollywood.
Okay.
That should be a red button. A big red button that you headbutt. Yeah.
There's going to be so much paperwork if we do that, and I'm not doing it.
No, there won't. There'll be no one left to make this do the paperwork. They've all been blown up.
No, I'll admit, like, that was probably the worst decision. Like, I get it. They thought, hey, big name, we'll be able to put asses in seats. But when you're looking at the source material, it was just a bad idea.
Like, and what's worse is they've clearly watched the first movie as, like we said, they've taken certain scenes verbatim, visually speaking.
Or asked somebody that watched it and was like, what's some cool, really, like, popping scenes? Well, there's this spot, this spot.
But like they'd have to have shit. Man, thank I you. Thought about it until now, but you're right. Right.
That's just me asking you. Hey, Giz, highlight this for me. And you going, well, dude, there was this badass bar fight. Okay, bar fight. And then like,
did you actually watch the movie? They just got their 10-year-old nephew to explain it to them.
Right,
Gary.
Right.
You like anime, don't you?
Got their 10-year-old nephew to put on the scenes on the DVD.
Right. Gary, I know you're too young for this conversation. Here it is. We have a large budget and we need to get ScarJo into something that's not nude, but nude. How would I do this? Anime is popular. How would I do this? The fucking chicken Ghost in the Shell was pretty in the nip for most. Not technically in the nip, but pretty in the nip for most of the movie. Ghost in the Shell, you say?
Show me what this is like some sort of
undersea haunted house kind of movie thing, is it? That like kind of.
No, it's high end cyberpunk, really, really deep intellectual stuff once you get into it.
But with ghosts. And what's the shell thing? Is it like a fish?
We're the no. We're the shell, the human shell, and the ghost is basically like the human.
Okay, this is getting too complex. Baseline, I'm going to tell you
something right now, and I've never been more serious about these words in my life. I don't know what you're saying, but if it'll get ScarJo in a see-through suit, sign the contract.
Yep. Just give me some like cool fight scene moments. We'll get it in production.
Do you want me to put down any of the really important cool fight story scenes?
No, why am I even talking to you? You're fired.
That's how the movie turned out. And then the nephew's like, oh god, I hope they don't say I helped.
Brawls and boobs. That's all we need. God dang.
I think that was actually the nephew.
I feel like we have worryingly given an insight into how that movie came about.
I'm not.
Oh, just briefly, I'm pretty sure Brawls and Boobs was the name of a PPW wrestling pay-per-view back in the day.
If it wasn't, I'd be disappointed.
Right.
Oh, Booze, Babes, and Boobs. Brawls and Boobs. That was it.
No, sadly, dude, I feel like that's how a lot of these kind of westernized come about. It's that whole, like, what are you kids watching these days? Oh, you know, it's this thing, Down with the Government. Yeah, okay, but is it cool? I mean, the storyline, is it cool? I mean, they fight in giant robots. That's cool. Giant robots. Tell me more.
Carter,
like, that's all it gets down
to. What movie, to get off this topic and move on, what?
I was actually just about to.
I'm going to interject it's weird and forcibly make Carter go next, because you and I have branched the topic of all of the other movies, and I know that he picked something. What'd you pick? What's your? Did you go for
the one that I've like absolutely hated?
Yeah. What's your? Yeah. There was one that you said earlier that were like, I can't think of one that I ever hated. Oh no, wait. Yes, I can.
Oh, I'll talk about that later.
I'm literally quoting you right now.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know because it was the whole Dragon Ball Z one. Like, that's the one I have officially, and I mean, like, I even watched like Fist of the North Star, and I was like, huh.
Oh my god!
I forgot about that movie. For a second.
Like, yeah, like I you know, kind of like I held Fist in the North Star kind of on the shelf, like, man, I really, really don't Let's like you. And then Dragon Ken Ball Shiro came out, and I was like, you know what, Vince?
I can't see how that's going to fucking go wrong.
Right.
The fuck?
After I saw Dragon, I was like, you know what, Fist of the North Star, you were not as bad as I thought you were. My
with
bad.
With his fingers. Like, like, this movie is the, like, this movie, the funny thing with the Fist of the North Star movie is it's actually the complete opposite of our issues we had with Ghost in the Shell, where for some reason they tried to add a love interest, they tried to add this running underlying subplot about a government that needed to be overthrown, they tried to add all of this extra shit in a series that's just about some dude with spiky kind of hair, but not even spiky, yeah, roughly kind of hair, who's able to make people explode by poking them with his fingers.
Hold up. I feel perhaps you missed some critical plot points in Fist of the North Star.
I know there's love interest.
Because there is a love interest, and there is kind of a post-apocalyptic gang
I'm aware.
Government that he's several despot fucking regions that he goes
Would
around
Would you say that they were done in a similar vein? Or were they just simplified down to the basic principles of me no like government?
It was usually me not like you because what you're doing to people or because of what you did to me in the past. One or both of those reasons.
I won't lie to you. You know? I'm rusty on my Fist of the North Star. It's been
I didn't realize it was 24 years until Joseph said something.
There's an entire
Oh yeah, this came
series.
Out like 95.
Yeah.
There's an anime series, a video game.
Multiple video games. They literally only released a mobile game last week. Or fucking last...
Oh, shit.
In the last 6 months, sorry.
But yeah, you're right. The live-action version, for some strange and God's unknown reason, just managed to be, apart from the fight scenes, which are awesome, managed to be dull and boring as fuck. Which was irritating, because even the abbreviated Fist of the North Star animated movie, which is pretty much what they were attempting to
me
replicate...
Me no like you. Me no like the people you work for. Me make you explode with my fingers.
Yep.
And maybe break some limbs. Don't
make you explode with the fingers.
He does do more than just explode.
Everyone's there for the head explosion. You know that.
I don't know. Some of the other ones that he did in the anime were pretty good. He made an entire, like, he made a dude just his entire,
explode.
His entire body just explode
with his fingers.
Yeah, but it wasn't just. But my point is, he punched him actually. He was a big dude already.
Yeah. Okay, it's not with the thing. He's hitting pressure points. That's how he makes you go boom.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. But the point is, because of the anime style,
five fingers
do,
of death
they
type shit.
Yeah, kind of ish.
Dude, I'm trying to make this movie sound cool.
So,
I'm not gonna lie.
It's not gonna happen. Watch the series. Everything that we've talked about tonight until the next movie, because it's probably. It's probably the only genuinely good Western live action adaptation. You were going to talk about it, weren't you? Battle Angel Alita?
I was, but I wouldn't say it's the only good
Western
adaption.
Style.
Yeah, just...
thank you.
Yeah, because Crying Freeman with Mark Dacascos was...
That's right. I forgot about that one.
Fantastic adaptation of the first story arc from the Crying Freeman manga and anime. Now it was dulled down a bit when compared to the anime series, but the brief story is that the Freeman is an assassin that works for a particular Chinese triad. He whacks the head of the Yakuza and is seen by an artist named Imu Ohara. Later on, the head of the triad, now in the live action, the head of the triad goes into the cop shop and basically tries to say, look, I'm in trouble. We're after getting into this shit. This mad stuff's after. Oh, no, the head of the Yakuza goes in and tries to say, I'm in trouble. All this mad stuff's happening. He, like, fucking... Imu's already there to be questioned about the death of the first assassination. Freeman runs in, whacks the other guy. They lock eyes again. It's a really cool, intricate story about assassinations and love and the anime goes further because he ends up kind of like going out on his own and ends up having to go up against all these different groups that he's worked for in the past. But in terms of just getting that first story arc and getting all the plot points and cool fights and everything, the live action version is pretty good. There is like differences from the anime and from the comics, but overall it was enjoyable visually speaking, and it gave you a good idea and a good sense of where things were going. I think the plan was to actually do more films, but for whatever reason they only ever did that first one.
Probably because half of America.
No, it was the
crying Freeman.
It's a possibility. Now, the other, actually, to be fair, it's also probably because it didn't get released in America until 2018. So it was Canadian, French, and Japanese
production. No, it came out in 1995. Talking live action.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, because it's like the trailer I'm looking at here definitely is not from 2018.
No. Despite being heavily promoted by Viz Media on Americana magazine and reprints of the Crying Freeman graphic novel, the film was not released in the US until November 2018 on Amazon Prime Video.
Okay, I got France 1996, so sorry. I got the wrong.
Like, I'm telling you now, you are absolutely not 100% looking at the right film. It wasn't. I'm not saying it was shot in 20. I'm saying it wasn't released in America until 2018.
We had it over here, or more importantly,
like
France, in 1996.
We would have gotten it through Manga UK. That's how I found it. They're like the live action wing. Same with the
Owen or whatever. Clive. I can't remember his name.
But getting back to your point, yeah, like you were going to say a while ago. I mean, for as often as Hollywood seems to get the shit wrong, Battle Angel Alita is a prime example of how to get the shit right. And, more importantly, drawing from several different source materials to do it. Not just the anime, but also from the comics and melding stuff in together. So that visually speaking, you have everything
spot on. It was like
on,
that they actually went off and studied the source material and found other bits of the source material that they could all cohesively put together to make a very, very competent and understandable movie.
That's because James Cameron's been wanting to do
this
for the last three fucking
decades. Yes, I know, but he's too busy
trying
to make blue monkeys fucking swing around in trees. God damn you, James Cameron.
It's Dances with Smurfs, dude. Dances with Smurfs. I think you find I am not.
Hey, Buzz.
Hello, Buzz.
Hey, Buzzles.
On his reprieve from the spaceship.
Yeah, Alita is a prime example of how to do things right. Now, hopefully, we get a sequel, because to be perfectly honest, as good as Alita, Battle Angel Alita is, it is just the first stepping stone. And for anyone that's even just seen the anime, you know that there's more to it. And if you've read the comics of it, there's so much more. And it's all hinted at in that first film. You can see the larger world that they want to build. They even got in Edward Norton to do a little cameo as Alita's nemesis, fucking Nova, at the end of it. But it's just,
I guess
it's a work.
It hasn't even been given the green light yet. So, but there's talk about Battle Angel 2.
I know it's red light.
They've been talking about wanting to, basically, I think.
Apparently, it was the whole handing over 20th Century Productions to Disney, the process of getting the green light, because even more complicated. So it's sitting on somebody's desk waiting to be approved, kind of style.
Thing is, I wouldn't normally say this, except for the fact that having read the stuff and then watching the film, I can see that James Cameron is drawing so much from the written material. That means that there are so many films that can potentially be made just following along the kind of stuff that happens. Like, there's the rollerball tournament that she's in now. There's all that. Yeah, cool. But then there's other stuff that happens. There's there's exploring the rest of the post-apocalyptic world. There's getting up the Zion. there is kind of a... Basically, the story goes to a point, and then a few years later, someone decided to go, to do more stuff, whereby they said, "If what if, rather than this being the ending, this was the ending," and it allowed for more stories to be done, which had like a practically an intergalactic fucking martial arts tournament. Elita has...
Dude, this actually looks pretty tight.
Elita has what I can only describe as a human-sized butterfly knife. And by that I mean it's a butterfly knife the size of her. You know, that's a weapon that she has. And I'm not sure if that's the same weapon that she's supposed to have at the end of the Elita film that just changed it into that blade, or if it's something different, because it's been a while since I read the comics of Elita. And yeah, I'm just trying to remember certain details. But what I do know is, if there's more films, which I hope to the gods there are, there's so much story that they can draw from. And unlike some of the stuff that we've seen previously, because of the way James Cameron treated this stuff, because he obviously fucking loves it himself, that means that I'm not worried about, you know, if they decide to go their own way, that it's going to be shit, because they're still going to be drawing from the source material. And I'm confident that whatever way they choose to adapt it will at the very least be true to the intentions of the storylines and the kind of the notions that, once again, this kind of, you know, almost metaphysical work can look at in regards human consciousness. Like we were saying with Ghost in the Shell, the idea that what is humanity? Once we get to a certain point of prosthesis, of integration with cyber parts, where does the line get drawn between a human soul and a computer program, and vice versa? All these things get explored and they get elaborated on while still having fantastic fight scenes, really cool characters.
Really cool characters.
Nova is a fucking cunt. Once he gets rolling, Nova is a sadistic, evil, long-lived cunt who then also kind of turns out to be a bit of a, like, big game good guy, if you get my meaning. Or it's kind of like, he's a horrible bastard, but if he wasn't doing this, things could be so much worse.
See, I remember when this came out, but, like, sadly, and this is kind of my own fault, I just finished, you know, Ghost in the Shell, didn't know anything about Elite, and I was like, yeah, I'm good. So I just wound up giving this a hard pass.
Oh, no, it's a really good movie. Knowing anything, you should watch it if you haven't seen it.
No, like, looking at the trailer, I'm definitely kind of wanting to check it out now and hearing everything he's got to say about it.
Well,
I kind of feel bad that I gave it the pass
that,
now.
On that, folks, I think that's a good point for us to round it off. And basically, long story short, do Battle Angel Alita more. If not literally do Battle Angel Alita more, but if you're going to do anime adaptions in a Western style, maybe do it like Battle Angel Alita. Something like that, along those lines.
Or maybe do, remake.
Yeah, but do it with the same meticulousness and care that you did with Battle Angel Alita. I'm not saying remake the movie Battle Angel Alita. I'm saying remake, do good job, is what I'm saying. Battle Angel Alita did a good job. Do good job.
Please.
Can't just say we're getting a One Piece live adaptation.
That's for Netflix. I'm waiting for them to fuck it up.
Don't care.
In the same mood as Death Note.
Mm. Awesome. Great. Let's take all our characters and dilute them down to fuck, and bar one, which will get remarkably on point. Yep, that's going to be it from us here at the Gorecast. Have we picked movies? Do we know what we're reviewing?
They're in our chat. I can drop them. They're in the chat. I can drop them to Fresh Points.
I was thinking more if you could just tell me what they are on air, so people know what's coming up for the week.
Wolf Project Hunting, or what was that? Wolf Project Hunting.
It looks like a bloody massacre.
Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
I am not looking forward to that movie.
And oh crap, I can't think of the third one.
No, that's in the wrong thingy.
Crap. Oh, wait a minute. Unhuman. Sorry, I had it in my notes right in front of me. Fuck, that was sad.
I am
Unhuman.
Not looking forward to Winnie the Pooh. Just from reviews that I've seen, all of the things that I was worried were going to happen, happened. And
I'm curious, I'm not gonna lie.
In that case, might I recommend at the very least watching Project Wolf Hunting after you've watched Winnie the Pooh to kind of rinse your brain out with some
no
with a lot of gore.
I'm gonna watch that first, so it'll okay. put me in a good mood.
I feel that's a mistake on my part,
on
okay.
the movie's part if I don't do it that way, because otherwise there's a very high possibility I'm going to go into your movie really angry and nothing's going to make me impressed. What?
Fair point. Watch watch good. Project Wolf Hunting first.
Why is
oh
this,
yes, those
this
are
makes
our
no
three.
Sense to me. Why is this? Why are you doing this? Because I was trying to center
around?
Me back up because I'm not centered, but now I. No. There's...
We're going off the air. Is this really something you want to care about now?
Did you ever watch a TV show back in the day called Mastermind?
That sounds familiar. Yeah,
I've started, so I'll finish. That's basically what
I've
I was
started,
trying to get
so
at.
I'll
there
finish.
We go, I'm centered. Anyway, that's going to be it from us here at the Gorecast. We'll catch you all during the week where we're going to be talking about some other sort of mad horror bollocks. Gorecast out, fuckers. Bye-bye.